Hey, what's up? It's the Black and Jew podcast, episode 21.
Yeah, 21, we can drink. And 21. Which is so appropriate because we have a homebrewer / comedian, Josh Silverman, on the podcast today.
Hello!
Yeah, Josh is awesome. Really, really great comic. Very Jewish.
If you don't remember Josh, I always described him, it's been three times now, where I've described him as, this is the third, as an uncool Bill Burr. And I say that very endearingly. I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean like Bill Burr, just, you know, button the shirt all the way up.
I feel like any comparison to Bill Burr is good as long as it's not like a really shitty Bill Burr. Like you were Bill Burr if they were a hack. Like that would be shitty.
Right.
But being a, you know, just, and maybe even louder Bill Burr, which is kind of hard, but yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, yeah, yeah. You're the loudest comic.
I'd say I'm louder, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of energy when Josh is up on stage, and I really enjoy it and like it. Yeah. And when you have like these long form bits that just like they go and they don't feel like, oh, this is the whole thing. No, the crowd's always with you, and I like it.
So, well, usually. Yeah. I can't say all the time.
I think we've got like 10% of our listeners on the podcast right now.
We should stop having our listeners on the podcast.
Why?
I can come up with a good reason why.
Well, we should, as long as they're comedians or something, yeah, that's okay. Then when we have Christine on, then that'd be like, you know, then we've had 2/10 of our listener base. And it's funny because, you know, we don't really have to worry about having our listeners on the podcast because most of our guests have not heard the podcast before. Like had Neri listened to the podcast before?
No
probably
Neri
not.
Hadn't. I don't think Vargas had. We're going to have Lisa on this week.
Xander did.
Yeah, Xander did his due diligence. And Xander was a wonderful guest.
So yeah. You see, listen, get on, and you're a great guest.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah, bar's been set pretty high.
That's how you get on. All you got to do is listen to the podcast, and we'll have you as a guest. Please be on the podcast.
We'll favorite your tweets. We'll
do it. We'll suck your dick.
We'll like
care.
Your post. We'll give you some bread.
Yep.
Yeah, we do have. Oh yeah, we baked bread yesterday, so you can get some of that Black and Jew bread.
Yes.
Hopefully, you can. It won't impede you from going to work on time too much, and you can try it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's legendary.
That's what I hear.
I just baked Irene Morales her farewell loaf.
Oh yeah, because she's moving to New York.
Yeah, she's moving to New York on July 7th.
July 7th. Damn,
yeah,
that's close.
Oh, wow. I know, very close. It's weird when people say those things. You're like, yeah, whatever. But like, she's actually doing it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, she got a job working at Barney's.
Sweet.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So fuck it, man. Just grind. Hustle and grind, man.
Wow. Comedian turned barista turned comedian. Whoever saw that coming?
Barista. She was a barista?
If you're working at Barney's Coffee.
No, Barney's the retail place.
The retail.
Oh, not Barney's Coffee. Oh,
the
okay.
The high-end retail place. Yeah,
what
yeah.
kind of Jew are you that you don't know what Barney's is?
I don't know. Do we have a Barney's down
a horrible
here?
Jew.
No,
we
don't.
Oh, that's
should,
why.
But you should come out of the womb knowing what Barney's is, because eventually you're going to have to buy some for your Jewish wife, or she won't blow you.
Well, you forget I'm only half Jewish.
Oh, you're only half Jewish?
I'm only half.
Get the fuck off the podcast, then. The fuck, this isn't the half Jew and black
I just,
podcast. Black and
I'm
Jew podcast.
Half black. I don't.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So I'm the outlier here.
Yeah.
Why it's Jew and the half black and Jew podcast. You're black and Nicaraguan, so I don't know. I don't know how that racial. I was gonna make a really racist statement right there, so let's just not. Let's move along. Move along, guys.
To any other time.
I suppose that. Yeah. Usually I like to keep it PC, but I decide on this time. But yeah, it's okay, man. You just you make up for your half Jewishness with you're a full Jew funny, but only a half Jew.
Oh, thank you.
I always like your watching you do stand up because you do all that what's it called? All that, you know, you always talk about like politics or like current events or just like that social commentary kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Which is good because you know, a lot of comics do it and it's like you really don't grasp the subject to you at all, but not you.
It's a wacky time to
be alive.
Be alive. I mean, with all the craziness that's been going on. I mean, even today. I mean, they had that big Supreme Court ruling today.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You touched on one of the subjects I was going to get to later in the podcast.
Well,
but let's do it now.
Fast forward. Let's do this.
Let's talk about it now. So, Hobby Lobby. All right. They just won in the Supreme Court a ruling that says that you know, as part of Obamacare, and stop me if I'm fucking this up, as part of Obamacare, they were enforcing employers to pay for, you know, contraceptive coverage.
Uh-huh.
But because of religious objections, Hobby Lobby's like, no, we don't believe in it. And the Supreme Court ruled that no, in fact, you do not have to force your employees to, you don't have to force an employer to get birth control because of religious objections under Obamacare. So now, Hobby Lobby is not required to give them birth control, which, is pretty fucked up.
5-4 decision.
Ugh. Ugh. I hate that split. Yeah. What do you think, Josh? I know you're very conservative, right? You're a red state kind of a guy.
Yeah. Total Tea Party guy.
Yeah.
USA, USA. No. I mean, it's a lot of people are viewing it as kind of definitely is like an anti-woman decision, but really it's more giving more corporate power.
Yeah.
Is really what it is. I mean, corporations are now, well, corporations have been for at least 100 years now.
Yeah.
Are people. And now they're able to do the things that even people like object religiously and all these other, and it just gives them more power to do that.
I feel like corporations don't have enough power though, so this is a good thing.
They need more.
Yeah, they need more.
Private armies. That's where they're going.
Someone was saying that America is an oligarchy and not a democracy.
Yes,
I read an article about that.
They did the I think it was Princeton did this big meta study, going back to like 1981.
Yeah.
Where they tracked what the general public wanted in terms of policy versus what like ultra rich or big businesses wanted as policy.
Yeah.
And they found that the general public had a statistically insignificant
impact
wow. on what public policy ended up being.
Wow. It sounds like an oligarchy to me, but like where you get to vote. It's like, isn't that how it is in Cuba where there's like elections, but it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
I'm not saying America's communist Cuba. No. But, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where you're like, why the fuck? And a lot of people drink the Kool-Aid, you know? Like, they drink that, like, Koch Brothers Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're just like, people always, when it comes to the gun control debate, right?
Uh-huh.
It's like people, they'll take the NRA talking points and regurgitate them and be like, it's about freedom. It's like, why? The NRA's exists to make sure that gun companies make money. Why they do not have your best interest in mind. Why are you towing their line? I don't understand.
Oh no. I mean, the NRA doesn't even tote the NRA's own talking points. I mean, remember that they were for universal background checks like 10-15 years ago, and now they're not. And then remember the it came out a couple months ago, the woman who invented the smart gun?
Yeah.
The smart gun?
It was this gun where it would only fire if you had like this special bracelet on. It was like an RFID chip or something to prevent.
Okay, like in Metal Gear Solid.
Kind of.
No, that's what happened. They had ID tagged guns. Holy shit.
Yeah.
So this is made. Like,
they
this
had
is,
it in James Bond too. In Skyfall.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
They had it in Skyfall where it's like, oh, your handprint. Holy shit. This, so we have that.
We have that. It's a bracelet that you wear that has like an RFID chip. And unless that chip is within, I think, like 10 feet or something like that of the gun, the gun will not fire. And anyway, this one store was, a store like Maryland or something like that, was like, yeah, we'll stock these new guns. I figured it'd be a good seller. And the guy was just getting death threats. The woman who invented it was getting death threats and rape threats and all this other from just these crazed gun nuts.
Jesus.
Thinking that their attitude is that once you have proof of concept that this can work, that then the government, the goddamn government come to take the jobs, is going to make all guns have to have this.
Oh, yeah.
Which, dictatorship.
Yeah.
that's
kind
of how it
works. That sums up the argument pretty well. It's like, dictatorship. You make a good point because they're just so worried about the government, you know, taking our guns and our freedoms and stuff, that they're just, but really they're just towing the line of the gun manufacturers. Like, like the gun manufacturers are doing such a good job of like, this is in America's best interest, and also our quarterly earning reports.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, gun sales are up, even though the number of people who have guns has gone down.
What? So then that means the same people that have guns are just buying more guns.
They're stockpiling more guns.
They're stockpiling guns because they're afraid that we'll take away their guns.
Yeah, right.
That Obama will take their guns.
That Obama will come into your house. Oh, yes, give me your guns and no more guns for you and all your bullets and bye, fucker. And then just...
Obama would make it to three houses before he got shot doing
that. Oh, yeah.
What do you think, though? Like, so there obviously is a gun control problem, right? In America.
Right.
You can't deny that. But what would happen if we did, like, pulls in Australia and was just like, no more guns? Like, what do you think? You think it would be different? The effects would be different because America's different? Or just it would be the exact same? It would be a replicatable scenario? Because, you know, Americans' gun culture is way different than Australian gun culture.
Right.
Or British gun culture, European gun culture. So you think that it would be a, like, a bad idea for that to happen? Like, what do you think would happen?
I mean, I still think that... Because I think just Americans in general, we're a very violent people.
Uh-huh.
So I think that we still will have a lot of incidents of violence. Perhaps they'd be more survivable.
So you're saying, like critically wounded, not killed.
Yeah, like, instead of, like, guy goes in a shopping mall, kills 20, it'd be like, guy goes on stabbing spree in shopping mall, wounds 12, or
but
something
what
like
I'm
that.
Asking, what I'm asking, though, is do you think that we'd be able to pull that off?
No.
No.
No. There's too many guns.
Like, not like Australia pulled it off back in the day.
No. I mean, there's almost as many guns as people in the U.S. It's like 300-something million.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we should just arm everyone in the U.S. Just arm them.
I think everyone should be armed, especially that crazy lady yelling on the subway. Like, why doesn't she have a gun? Well, I feel like we'd benefit as a society if she had a gun while she talked about how Cheez-Its are taking over her apartment.
Right.
Well, you know? If I also had a gun and she started shooting people up, well, I'd shoot her.
Yeah.
And there we go. End of problem.
Or not, like, happens in every shooting. You know? Like, people say, like, if one person had a gun, then we could have multiplied the killings by it because they're probably not good with it.
Right.
But it's weird how, like, you ever seen those open carry guys, like open carry Texas? They went to a Chipotle carrying fucking assault rifles.
Oh, yeah.
What was it? It was a forum. Did you show me this? It's an open carry forum where people just talk about, like, hey, does this GameStop have open carry policy?
I didn't see that. No, that's not me.
Oh, my gosh. Someone linked me to a forum where that's they were crazy. Legitimately discussing whether the GameStop in, like, bumfuck Maryland had, like, an open carry policy.
I can't buy Ocarina of Time unless I got an assault rifle. I just don't feel safe doing it. That's crazy, man.
Oh, my gosh. Guns.
But, yeah, I think... I like The Onion always has the best gun control
or best articles. Post mass shooting.
Yeah, they're so good. Like, one of them was like, there was nothing we could have done to prevent this. Says country where only country where this sort of thing happens.
I saw that one. Oh my god.
It's so good. The Onion's just fucking brilliant. I love it. I love The Onion so much. But back to the birth control. Okay. So yeah, I feel like it's convenient that out of all the stuff in the Bible that it says that, you know, conservatives, religious people try to advocate for, it's never the stuff that inconveniences men or heterosexuals. It's only like women and gay people, you know? It's like divorce is illegal in the Bible, but I'm not going to do it.
Or not any of the stuff that would inconvenience anyone in their just ordinary daily lives.
Yeah, exactly.
We can take a page out of the book of strident atheism
and
talk about how you can't wear clothes that have multiple fabrics.
Yeah.
And if you're a farmer, you can only plant your field with one type of crop and all this other dumb shit that happens to be in there. But, you know, they don't care about that kind
of
stuff.
I like the idea of there being physically in existence an actual book of strident atheism. Like in paperback that you could buy.
That you could buy, and then you just pull it out of your back pocket. I have this page here that says something about textiles that you're gonna... May I play devil's advocate? Pun intended.
It says here in my book of strident atheism that you touched a guy's nuts by accident, so we gotta chop off your hand, sweetie. I'm sorry.
Yep.
But that's what it says in the
if
Bible.
If you kicked him in the nuts, that's okay, but because you used your hand, it's like in soccer, you get red carded. Only the red card now is that we take your arm.
Oh, God, as a woman, it just must be so frustrating, you know? Like, just the government, like, trying to regulate your abortion and your birth control. What I think is really funny is that a lot of people that hate abortion, hate birth control, it's like, really? Like, if you hate abortion so much, shouldn't you be pro birth control?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that's good at preventing abortions.
They changed the law now. Now protesters can go up to
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
They can go up to the abortion clinic and yell in your face.
Oh, yeah.
That's horrible. It is horrific, horrible. Dude.
It is horrible. And what did they rule? They ruled that, like, the end of your nose, that's your space. Like,
really?
That was, like, a while back, but, like, you can't... If you're going to get in someone's face, you can't go past, like, the end of their nose. Check me on this. Maybe it's bullshit, but I was listening to this on the radio. And, like, you know, that was legit their only line of defense for the abortion clinics. Like, just stay on the sidewalk. Leave everybody else alone. And like, now they're trying to develop new systems in place to, like, protect people that want to get an abortion.
Yeah.
And, like, it just drives me crazy that, like, the people they think are getting abortions aren't usually getting abortions. You know, it's people that, you know, I don't need a baby in my life right
now. Yeah, yeah. Like, this baby's not going to benefit from this.
I'm going to just put it in a system that's way worse than, like, you know, ending something that isn't really a baby, you know?
Yeah, but I think George Carlin just makes such a good point with his bit about that, about how once you're out of the pussy, they don't give a fuck about you.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
They're like, whoa, let's not get hasty here. We don't really care about what happens to you after you get out of the pussy.
I hate people that say, put it up for adoption. You could just put it up for adoption. No, if you knew how adoption worked and the actual systems in place and, like...
And how horrible it is for a person, like...
Yeah.
I know quite a few people that work in that system, and it's pretty frustrating. Like, you know... My sister works in the whole child welfare system, and she says that the most disturbing thing about it is not the horrible things people do to their babies to get them taken away. It's the bureaucracy. That's the worst part, is just how all of this good stuff is stifled by bureaucracy and people looking out in their own best interests.
Isn't adopting an American baby now passe? Aren't you supposed to go to, like, China or Africa or something like that?
You're right. You're right.
Go there and put your baby up for adoption, and then it'll get adopted by rich Americans.
Wait, is this a real Chinese baby?
It's from China, ain't it?
It's like, this. Wait a second. This is a half-Jewish Chinese baby. No, thank you. I don't want no baby little Rabinowitz. God, dude, this is like, oh my God, this is so frustrating that these girls can't get their contraceptives as mandated by Obamacare, you know? Like, I feel like that could set such a bad precedent for other things, you know? Like, what if you want to religiously object to other things?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what Ruth Bader Ginsburg was really worried about. Like, if you're, let's say, a Jehovah's Witness and you have a business, are you going to say that, nope, my employees cannot get blood transfusions, they can't get transplants, you know, if you're a Christian Scientist and you have a business, my employees can't get Western medicine at all.
Yeah. This here says, would the exemption extended to employees with religious, because I got this article with a bunch of her quotes on it, extended to employees with religiously grounded objections to blood transfusions, Jehovah's Witnesses, antidepressants, Scientologists, medications derived from pigs, including anesthesia, intravenous fluids, and pills coated with gelatin, certain Muslims, Jews, and Hindus, and vaccinations. Not much help there for the lower courts bound by today's decision. It's like, it just opens the floodgates of the kind of things you can religiously object to.
Oh, yeah. What if you do something like that? What if you're, let's say, Catholic, and now you mandate that all of your employees must then tithe to the church, and you just take 10% out of their wages?
You think that's an extension of this? You think that you can make that argument?
Oh, they'll try.
You think they'll
try? Well, they're able to get this through. Why not?
Holy shit.
I guess so. I mean, I guess they'd be pretty happy if they could do that, you know? Because the Establishment Clause is inconvenient, let's be honest.
Well, yeah.
I want to be able to, you know, and I think it'd be really funny. Like, what if this was like a Muslim company trying to force, like, you know, saying that they won't pay for any lunch with pork in it?
Right.
I feel like
all my employees must wear burkas.
It'd be a little different, you know what I mean? Oh, great. Something else, I'm just like, all right, well, when something like this happens, the first thought is, oh, this is crazy. And the second thought is like, oh, Facebook is about to be unusable for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
I saw another Funny Onion article that was like, woman refrains from posting status about gun control that would sway entire debate. Like, it would have totally changed. And then it says, like, just like the She should have acted like the guy who put the out of Iraq bumper sticker that finally got the troops out of Iraq.
There, oh my God, there was this YouTube video that I saw just a couple days ago. It's about keeping your guns locked up so that your kids don't accidentally get to them. Because the idea is if your kids find it and it's something weird, they're going to play with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to play with it. So, I mean, I don't want to spoil the video without, well...
Oh, with the dildos, right?
Yeah, the one with the dildos.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so for the people who don't know, it's these two moms. And
for
they're...
people who don't know, a dildo is a device.
Oh, yeah. These two moms are talking, and they're just like, oh, you know, were the kids good? Yeah, they were good. And you see these two kids like, I will taste my steel. And you see them. It looks like they're sword fighting in the background. And it's like, oh, okay, that's cool that they're sword fighting. And then you see them run out, and they're running out. And you see that they have these big dildos in their hand. They're hitting each other with the dildos. And one of them is one of those vibrating dildos with the rabbit. Yeah. And so it accidentally turns on and the kid's like...
Oh, so funny. Until the dildo is something that kills your children.
Right. I knew a guy in college who... I don't know what it was, but he had this big floppy like... double-sided dildo.
Uh-huh.
It was like this big, like 2-foot-long, like purple double-sided dildo.
Was he trying to recreate the ending scene to Requiem for a Dream?
Is no. He just liked to beat people with it. Like, we would go over his place, he would pull it out, and he would just start hitting people. To the point where my other friends would buy dildos of their own so they could defend themselves from him.
You know, your friends could have gotten any other thing to defend
any
himself.
Any other thing, but they felt this was the best thing.
You got to be equal, you know? You can't bring a lightsaber to a sword fight.
Right. And he used to hit people so hard and so often with this thing that it kind of bent in the middle. And they really became more like dildo nunchucks.
I'm stronger. You struck me down. I'm stronger than you could have ever imagined.
Oh my gosh.
Hey Josh, I think you set the record for lowest input volume on as a Black and Jew guest.
What?
Yes.
Uh-oh. Is that a...
No, it's not bad.
Are people not going to be able to hear me?
No. What I'm saying is that like you got to put the input volume lower to compensate, you know what I mean?
Okay. Depending,
it doesn't matter. I just thought it was really funny. I'm like, wow, I've never put it here before. I've never put it at 5, it's usually at 7. No, it's good because usually it's the opposite problem where people don't speak up.
It's a gift.
I for some reason, I was not worried about that happening with you. I'm like, I feel like Josh is going to speak up just a little bit. Yeah. So, Josh, you've been doing comedy for a while, man, right? Like,
yeah.
10 years,
10
right?
years. 10 years. And look how
All
far
in
it's
South
gotten
Florida?
Me. No. I got my start, actually, in Gainesville.
In Gainesville. That's where the comedian Lakshmi.
Lakshay.
He got his start in Gainesville.
Yeah. I did comedy up there for 3 years, moved back down to Miami in 2007, and I've been doing it down here ever since.
How often could you go up when you're in Gainesville?
Once a week. Yeah, a week. They had a club kind of on the outskirts of town. It was a Coconuts back when I was there. I don't know what it is. Yeah, Coconuts Comedy Club. Apparently it's a chain.
Huh.
But it's called something else now, but yeah, they used to have this thing where the shows were on Thursdays, and then on Sundays, to get onto the show, you had to show up to this meeting on Sundays where you had to workshop your jokes.
What?
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, so because it was such a small community of people, like they wanted to make sure that everyone's kind of growing and everything like that. So they'd have this big workshop where you go up there, you tell your jokes, you know, people will kind of tag them up, and then you can do them on Thursday.
That's not bad. That's kind of interesting. And I can see the value in that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Weren't they dickheads? Didn't they like kick you out of the club?
Oh, yeah.
I remember
did.
I heard
yeah,
on Bad
did.
Dads you were talking about that.
Oh, am I telling that story again?
No, you don't got to tell the story.
Okay.
Just listen to Bad Dads episode. What was the hashtag on that?
Hashtag losers.
Losers, yeah. Listen to that episode.
We were commiserating about how badly we did.
I mean, look, I lost way before you guys, so I'm the bigger loser here.
Well. We argue that John actually was the biggest loser.
Why?
Because he made it to the final round, like the final five, and didn't win anything. So, but when they did the final five, they all had to go up on stage when they announced the top three. So John got to lose in front of a live audience.
Oh, wow. Aren't they shopping around that thing as a like a reality TV pilot or something?
Oh, reality TV pilot.
Great, Miami's greatest.
Miami's ultimate, because they ask you like interview questions and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Like,
which was awkward.
Yeah.
Really awkward. Yeah, they're trying to shop it around and do like a, because there's Ultimate Miami all kinds of things. Ultimate Miami comedian, Ultimate Miami singer, Ultimate Miami bartender, Ultimate Miami.
So which
drag
one?
Queen.
Whichever one hits.
Yeah, you know,
it's like what's the most dramatic artistic pursuit that we could find?
Drag queen, maybe.
Yeah, probably drag queen.
Can we combine drag queen and comedy? That'll sell.
Yeah, I'm gonna go up and drag. I was thinking about, you know, I was gonna go to that show that Lisa Correo does at the comic, or it's not a comic. This is a comic book convention, right? SuperCon.
Yes.
Because the other one's Animate, which was the anime convention. But I wanted to go dressed up as Yoko Littner. from Gurren Lagann, and like just do the whole set in drag and just wear a trench coat before that. But I'm going on a little family vacation, so those dreams have been dashed. That's a fun show to do. I love
it. Yeah, you did the Animate show.
Yeah, doing it amongst those fucking nerds.
I did the Animate show too. That was a lot of fun.
We're all nerds, man.
Yep.
I feel like we got the nerd jokes. I feel like most comedians I know are pretty nerdy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that whole outsider kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they, even if they're not like traditional nerds, they still have like a nerdy mindset.
Yeah.
You know, which helps for jokes. It really does.
My girlfriend is like an old school nerd because she like is not into any like cool pop culture stuff. She's a nerd that just would like spend her entire college was spent in the library pretty much.
Oh.
That's like 1960s nerd, you know?
Yeah.
That's like old. Like
that's
you don't,
before there was nerdy shit to actually do. Nerd.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like that's like 1930s nerd, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's old school nerded. She would just sit, like, so she doesn't have any cool pop culture things to talk about. Just like sitting in the library, which is the opposite of me because I like to get drunk and not do my work ever.
Oh, yeah.
Were you a fuck up in college, Josh?
Oh, yeah. Total fuck up.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah. Total complete fuck up.
Yeah, I got I'm getting a beer belly to prove it soon.
Oh, I already have it.
Yeah.
So
you're already there.
I'm already there.
It's like, that's not the belly of a man with a high GPA.
This is your future.
Oh, no. You're like the ghost of beer future.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I can't.
Yeah, I'm the ghost of fuck up future.
The ghost of fuck up future. Yeah, man. I know that, you know, it's funny because throughout your course of comedy, like since I've seen you go up, I feel like I've noticed a change stylistically with you.
Yeah. I definitely have.
You think so?
Oh, definitely.
Or am I just imagining it? Because I started like October of 2012. So like I'm coming up on 2 years in October, right? And I noticed that when you started out, it was a little more self-deprecating, and now it's more like social commentary.
I still do a lot of the self-deprecating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I still see that. I started like August 2012, and I think maybe the first time I saw you was at, have you ever done the Miami Improv?
I think I was still doing it back in 2012.
Yeah, I think I saw a little bit more self-deprecating, but I think he was still like with the mix of both, you know, social commentary and self-deprecating.
Yeah.
I think you have the best command of self-deprecating that I've seen, like in like the comedy scene here. Like a lot of comics will, they're self-deprecating as far as I've seen is like, I masturbate a lot, and then they'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Or like, my girlfriend sucks, and that's not really self-deprecating.
Right.
And then you have the, you know, Pan's Labyrinth joke that just fucking boom, like nuclear bomb set off.
I feel like I need to update that reference, but every time I try something new, it just doesn't work.
Like a White Walker. No, they're not.
A White Walker.
They don't look enough like
Walker,
it.
Maybe go classic like an Alice in Wonderland. I don't know.
I think self-deprecating is hard, you know? People think of every comedian as self-deprecating, but I think it's kind of hard to pull off, you know?
Yeah.
There's a balance to it. You can't do it too much.
Yeah.
Or too hard, because then you don't get laughs. You get, aww,
instead.
Yeah. That's the fine line that you need to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've crossed that line many a times. I remember one time we were at Vibes. I did those jokes and I got a bunch of aws. And then Eric De Silva comes up afterwards. And Eric De Silva, before he gets into his set, he goes, "All right, I want to call Josh Silverman back up to the stage." He's like, look at this. How many of you ladies who awed would give him a hand job right now in the back? No one spoke up. And then that's when Eric Da Silva goes, don't ever go aw to a comic again. Unless you're going to blow him, don't say aw to a comic again. Now get off stage.
That's amazing. Yeah, I don't know. I've like, whenever I try to do self-deprecating stuff, it fucking bombs really hard.
The only time I did self-deprecating stuff was at a open stage club. And that was a set after like my girlfriend broke up with me. And that's the only time I ever tried it. And it didn't work for me. Not because I couldn't do it, but just because like the command of that, you know, of that language, of that certain aesthetic was very new to me. And I just see you do it. And it's like, you have like a lot of energy behind it. It's not sad. Like if you see Louis do self-deprecating, he's kind of angry at he's like, he's incensed, or there's a fervor behind it.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that really feeds into that. And I wasn't able to do that because I guess I'm pretty laid back, and like, to put myself in those shoes was very interesting.
Yeah. You can't really force the kind of persona that you don't have. And I think it's hard too, because like, you got to sell the audience that you're confident, because if the audience senses weakness as a comic, they're going to just jump on it. So how do you sell confidence, but also at the same time talk about how much you hate your life, you know?
It's a difficult thing
to pull off.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's in body language.
Yeah.
Just that you have a confident stride on stage, you know, you're smiling while you do it. So that as a way to tell the audience, like,
oh, they don't want to kill
him.
Okay. He doesn't want to kill himself.
It's okay, I don't want to kill myself.
Yeah. Like, laugh with me. Don't worry.
Laugh with me. Come on. Yeah. Come on. We can do this.
I'm bringing this forth for you to enjoy. Have this meal. It's nice.
I'm bringing forth this Pan's Labyrinth style.
That's right. Who wants this?
That's so perfect, because the fairies in Pan's Labyrinth, they're like little like cherubs, like little twisted cherubs. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime I hear that joke, I always lose it. I think I apologize for this, but one time at a will call, you had changed it to Fairy from Narnia, and I stopped you, and I'm like, "Don't do Fairy from Narnia. Keep on doing Pan's Labyrinth Fairy." I'm sorry if I approached that really rude.
No, it's perfect, and I could tell from the response that I got, and I'm like, "Oh, that didn't work," because I thought, when did Pan's Labyrinth come out? Like what, 2000? Six?
Yeah,
a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is a really dated reference. I need to update this. And nothing that I found works. I found the perfect one.
So 10 years, do you plan on taking it out of here or?
Oh yeah. The goal is to eventually take the game to the next level and move on. But I feel like,
I like how you said it. Take the game to the next level.
That's right. We gotta go out there. We gotta execute. We gotta go make big plays. I feel like I have to. I'm not right now the big fish in the small pond that is Miami.
Yeah.
So going on to like New York or Los Angeles, where I'd be a really tiny fish in the biggest of all ponds, wouldn't serve me.
I don't know, man. I feel like if you went to New York, it would hammer you into shape.
Well, I mean, that's true, but how much longer am I going to have to? I mean, because I feel like there's enough quality down here to where I can really, I may not get the practice time, but at least there's enough quality here where I can motivate myself to go onward and further and all that. But
yeah.
I mean, the improv still has no idea who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been here, I don't know how long, and they don't care.
Yeah.
I think something like, how does the improv get to, well, two things. How much is too prepared? And then the other thing is, when does the improv know who you are? I don't want to say that I should be known, but like what I'm trying to say is like, how do they take notice? All the people they call up, well, I understand why they notice them, but you know, what does the improv deem as quality or like?
Oh, I have no idea. That's the problem.
I don't know. I haven't heard anyone quantify it. Like this is what you need to do. This is who you need to talk to. And this is what needs to be done before they call you up.
It's always such a nebulous thing to figure these things out in comedy. Yeah. You know, it's like, there's no clear path to the top.
Right. But my attitude is, if the one club here in South Florida isn't taking notice of me, how are the many, many clubs over in New York with
but
a much higher talent?
I feel like though that with that in New York, you're going to get so much better, so much faster that you're going to, it's going to, you're going to be noticed quicker, you know? Cause like you'll just get better, like way faster there. Cause you're going to be going up like so many times. And I think that with your style too, I think that it's taken a while to develop just because it's like, it's not the easiest thing. Like it's, you don't, you never go for cheap laughs. You know, it's like, it's always,
I try not to, no.
It's always like, there's like a depth to it that it's difficult because you have to mitigate the high-mindedness of your comedy with the relatability of your, of get relating to the audience, you know, because that's a hard thing to balance. Cause if like, you can go the other direction where it's like simple, easy as fuck, hacky, whatever, get those cheap laughs where you're super relatable, but there's not much to it. But then on the other hand, you know, you can get to the point where you're just like way too above the heads and everyone's like, go fuck yourself. And whereas if you were like an indie filmmaker or something, you could be like super avant-garde and like not give a fuck. And then you'd get noticed and make a big movie. But with comedy, you have to make it a certain amount of relatable. So I think striking that balance with your form of comedy is difficult. And I think that's why it takes a while. But on the trajectory that you're going, you know, there might be a steeper curve, but you once you get to that place where you're supposed to go, it could be really fucking good. Like, you're one of the only comics that I never miss your set ever.
Aww,
I always,
yeah.
When I hear that loud screeching Jew voice, I always go back inside.
oh shit, Josh is on.
Yeah, like when I'm outside and I hear, I look like a baby, I'm like, all right, gotta go inside, you know? But it takes a while to develop those things, you know? And I feel like if you went to New York, it would fucking be hammered. Like, it would just hammer you into the comic that you're supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My hope was that I was going to find some kind of job up in New York or LA and then use that as a way to backdoor my way into the New York and LA scene. Cause I don't want to move up there where it's really expensive to live, have basically no job or just work some kind of like shitty retail or fast food job, you know, and then struggle to do comedy from there. I mean, I've had way too many years of schooling to waste all of that time.
Yeah,
you know, serving coffee at a fucking Starbucks.
What do you have, like a master's?
I'm going to get one in August.
Oh, okay.
You should, what?
Yeah, if you could find a good job, just fucking,
oh, holy shit,
just fuck where you are. Just go do it, man. Like, just go, because like you can. That'll just make you good. Like. Just being going up that much eventually, and like you're not, you have that raw potential, you know? Like, it's not like you're going there as a fucking hack that's going to be just hammered into a just better hack, you know? Like, you could
into a Russell Peters. Oh,
whoa,
I don't know who's Russell Peters.
He's like, he's the richest comedian.
Oh. Yeah, he's an international superstar. He's the Indian, well, he's Indian descent, but he's actually Canadian.
I feel like I should know who this is.
He's actually nothing against him, but he's like the baseline. Like he's like comedian, and then there's people greater than him. But he's like he's like, I relate to everybody and everything, and I don't shake any waters at all.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, I don't. I think I recognize this.
He was one of the judges in the last Comic Standing.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Because he's Forbes, you know, richest comedian. He makes the most money out of comedy.
Yeah, he sells out arenas all over the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice. I wish I could have a show where people knew that there was a show first. That's my goal right now.
Yep.
So you don't have to be like, hey guys, sorry to interrupt. There's a comedy show going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's my goal. I want there to be a show where people come to see specifically me. Not, oh, here's a comedy show.
Oh, wait.
And no, I happen to be on it.
Yeah, yeah.
This is... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. Go on.
I was gonna say, this is kind of like the comedian's nature versus nurture argument, like geography versus actual, like the actual comedian.
Uh-huh.
Like you say, like he goes to New York, he'll get better, which, you know, in many ways is very true.
Yeah.
And you know, you sometimes have those moments where your high-minded bits are, you know, your reliability and high-mindedness aren't matching up, or they do, and bam, it hits. How much of that is due to the fact that you're down here? I mean,
you're saying that his jokes go over the head of the Miami audience? Is that what you're saying?
I've heard that before, and I've heard the counter arguments to that being like, no, it doesn't matter. Just do your jokes, and if you're good, you're good. But
I don't think so. I don't think it goes over people's heads.
I have heard that as well. I mean, yeah. I have heard that the wrench is...
the wrench.
Jimmy the wrench.
Jimmy the wrench. Little Hugo Jimmy the wrench.
Little Hugo Jimmy the wrench Vasquez over here.
Yeah. Jimmy the wrench.
Yeah, me and Christina, I was seeing if Hugo responded to any name besides Hugo, so I'd say, Jimmy, Jimmy. And like to see if he would respond. So like so then we were sitting for 20 minutes last night coming up with nicknames like Jimmy Hoo Ha, Jimmy Soft Shoes, Jimmy Lasagna. And then I was like Jimmy the Wrench Vasquez. What if we called him Jimmy the Wrench Vasquez? And I made this little
and it worked.
Yeah, I made this
little. If you call him Wrenchy, he'll come over.
Yeah, the wrench. Hey Wrenchy, look, I made this for him.
Hugo, a.k.a. Jimmy the Wrench Vasquez. The enforcer. Don't ever call Jimmy the Wrench Vasquez over
here. I've taken down 25 UPS drivers. I'm going for more.
You coming here wearing brown on my doorstep? You going the fuck down. Down with my bones.
It's a lot of, got a lot of carcasses of postmen over here, is all I'm saying. You don't fuck with the wrench.
You think this car can just drive down the street like you own the place? Huh? Come. You know whose place this is? You know who you're fucking with right here?
Jimmy the wrench! Jimmy the fucking wrench Vasquez.
Come here, Spot. I'll do you a favor, Spot. Just come over here in my yard. I'll do you a favor. Get that motherfucker Clifford over here, and he'll be red for a different reason.
Oh, I love my little Jimmy the Wrench. Jimmy the Wrench Vasquez. For sometimes when I say his nicknames to him, it looks like he just feels humiliated, which I find to be hilarious. Little wrenchy wrench. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's so much going over the head of people in Miami. It's just like you just get better. Like the more time you spend on stage, the better you get. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right. Like that's all there is to it. And like if you go to somewhere like New York where you can get up like as much in a night as you get up in a week in Miami, then that's just gonna fucking make you better.
You know? Yeah, it will.
It also depends on how the quality of how you do the show. Like, not the quality of the show, but how the quality of you yourself doing a show. Like, if you go into there, it's like, I'm doing a bunch of shows. A bunch of shows is not going to lead... Take something out of it, I think, you know? Yeah. Like, if you...
You're saying, like, don't just go up on stage and talk shit.
Yeah, don't go up to the stage and talk shit and also make the most of your stage time.
Yeah.
As in, you know, try new stuff, try variants, experiment and make the most of your stage time.
Yeah.
Going up five times in one night does not guarantee you for, you know, that Conan spot.
Yeah, it's true. But I think that if you're going up, you're going up, you know, true. Like that's just time spent working on your craft, you know? And even if like you're not, as long as you're not like just talking shit on stage, and even then, it's just like you're comfortable on stage. You understand what people respond to, you know, and it's not like Josh. I never see you waste time on stage. You know,
try not to. No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got that little timer in front of you.
I do.
Now.
Yeah,
I use a watch that I always forget to set. That's what I usually do.
I kind of just feel it out.
You just feel it out.
Oh, it feels like five right now.
I had to time when I noticed it because I film everything I do. And that's another big thing. Make sure you... It's not just about getting up there. You got to make sure that you're able to somehow analyze your performance afterwards.
Yeah.
So if you're not recording yourself, you have no idea, you know, just how well it was. Because, you know, I've had a whole bunch of sets where... I get off stage. I'm like, oh, I think that went pretty well. And then I listen to the tape. And I'm like, this sucks. What the hell was I doing up there?
This happens all the time to me.
Yeah.
I think part of it has to do with the microphone on my camera.
Is that too.
Is it like, it doesn't really, it picks up like the direction that it, the field of listening or whatever the fuck you want to call it is kind of narrow. So like people behind it don't get picked up, but it's kind of good. Cause I'm like, wow, I'm not like, I fucking killed. I'm like, oh, wow, I kind of suck tonight. Shit. You know, even if it was a good set.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing worse than listening to it, and then you realize, even if it does go pretty well, you're like, oh, these jokes hit. Mm-hmm. And you notice there's this long stretch where you have, like, nothing. And you're just like, oh, I'm wasting so much time here.
Yeah, yeah. Or trying to, like, I've been trying to cut down on my setup times and shit. Like, you know who's really great for that is, if you ever talk to Tim Hanlon, like Tim Hanlon.
Yeah.
I've seen Tim Hanlon a few times. Like, I'm going up Northmore to do comedy. Ran into Tim Hanlon a few times, and I ask him, like, because right now I'm trying to make a tape to send to festivals, and I'm just trying to do a good 5 minutes. It's like going to make it clean, and it's going to be all my cancer material, mm-hmm. my best 5 minutes about cancer. And I asked Tim to workshop these jokes for me. I'm like, just give me some notes. And he would give like really good notes. And I'm like, you, that's a fucking brilliant point. I'm like, that's why the joke sucks. I need to change that. He's like I have one joke that like, he's like, you can condense both of those things, so it's not redundant, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, and there's some times where you have some lines that you love personally.
Yeah. Oh, those are the worst. Oh.
That you're just like, these don't hit, and you have to cut them. Yeah. You're like,
oh,
I hate that. I love that line, but I mean, I remember I had a joke. This is a couple of years ago. I used to have a joke where like the punchline of the joke was, it's like finding the Necronomicon, I think was the, was the line. I can't even remember what the joke was about anymore, but I remember the Necronomicon was one of them. And it used to never hit, but I'm like, I love that line. I want to keep it in there. And then I did this comic book shop in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
I did a show there and I did that line and it also got a zero. So I'm like, all right, this line just sucks. Yeah.
It doesn't work. Like, what is that? Is that a thing from Lord of the Rings?
No.
What is that?
H.P. Lovecraft, the book that tells all about the elder gods.
Oh, like Cthulhu and all that
shit? Like Cthulhu and all that other kind of stuff?
Cthulhu. I don't even know about that. And I was in band in middle school. I played the trumpet. So, you know, if I don't...
middle school, you said, never mind. Yeah. Band in my high school, like, the joke was like, your initiation is an STD.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
I've never, when I joined band, I didn't like, these people, where are the band nerds? Where's that American Pie thing going on?
Really?
Yeah, no.
They're all fuckable?
Yeah, they're all fuckable. And, well, whatever. In my band, there's like practice rooms.
Yeah.
At least one person got pregnant in each room.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Jesus, where the fuck did you go to school?
Yeah.
Miami Senior High.
Oh, that's where
that'll do it.
That's where, yeah. Oh, wow. That's crazy, dude.
Yeah.
That's not like my band at all. My band is very awkward. But I guess the nerds, there was like nerd incest, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just like a convention. Like, people go to conventions because they want to fuck.
To anime conventions? And
yeah, definitely.
Oh, definitely.
All that dressing up, all that, let's rent this hotel room, bro. They're
no
all
shit.
Just going
I didn't know
though.
I did not know that.
All that free, those free hug signs. That's yep. that's like wearing the different colored bandana for gay people. Like it's
free hugs.
Yep.
It's like he's down to fuck.
Yep.
He's a free hugger.
But you can't put down to fuck on a sign.
Down.
This is interesting. I feel like my mom when she watches like those TLC documentaries. She's like, Michael, do you know what furries are?
Yeah.
I'm like, Mom, do you see how much time I spent on the internet? Of course I know what furries are.
Yeah,
I know what furries are.
I remember the point in my life that was pre-furry, you know, PF, and now it's AF after furry. Just like before I learned what bukkake was, and now I know what bukkake is.
It's always fun to explain to people what bukkake is.
It's okay. It's a Japanese genre, but it's not. It was invented by the Japanese, but here's the main thing. Usually someone's in the middle, doesn't always have to be a woman, and then, you know, you explain to them, and then you see their face transform,
yeah.
And now they know what bukkake is, and they just lost...
And a little bit of innocence has left the
world.
Yeah,
they just like, oh, boom, now you're an adult. There you go.
Yep.
I think, you know, going back to what you were saying before, I think killing your babies is super important, and I hate it. I hate it so much. Like... Oh, God. It's the worst thing when you have a piece of a joke or something. You're like, I love this, but it's just not.
I haven't had a joke like that. I think I'm coming up to one. There's this joke about Wu-Tang that I do.
Yeah.
That no one ever gets as much. No one, like, I love the joke because what I do is like, oh, Wu-Tang should make a porno. And, you know, people are like, Wu-Tang should make a porno? I'm like, yeah, they have shoes. They have music. They have socks. Why don't they make a porno yet? And then I say, I got all the names, guys. Like, the names would be great. Like, instead of inspect the deck, inspect my dick, and I go through the whole thing. And it doesn't hit like I want it to.
Yeah.
And I love that joke so much, but I might just have to cut it.
Sometimes you have to have an abortion.
Yeah.
Well, you better do it before the Supreme Court says that you can't.
I better do it before the Black and Jew podcast health plan, before Mike and his weird cult of religion.
Yeah, because, you know, we have health insurance and a 401k here at the Black and Jew podcast. Yeah. Even though we're on the free service on Podomatic.
We do a thing where we just do South Korean advertisements and we make a killing.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
All right, wait. Before we run out of time, I want to talk about... We almost had a viewer letter, right? Listener letter. We almost had one that we were going to read on the podcast, but the person who wrote it is here now. So I'm not going to read his own letter in front of him, but... It's remember we asked for Josh to write in about bandwagon fans, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Josh did. It was a very well thought out email. At the very end, it said, "P.S. Have me on your podcast," which, by the way, had no effect on you being on the podcast. Because I hate it when that happened, because like I already planned on having you on the podcast anyway, and then you put that thing, and then I was like, "Fuck!" Now it looks like that's the only reason. Same thing happened with Lamont, because on his podcast, it's like, "No South Florida podcast has had me on," and I'm like, "Hey, you want to be on the podcast?" But I planned on it anyway, so whatever. So yeah, I love this thing. It was very enlightening, right? Because I'm not a big sports fan, as you know.
Right,
listening to the podcast.
Make you mad. Yeah.
But my favorite thing was about how you talked about you don't like how bandwagon fans make us look bad, right?
Right.
Like,
okay. And
you say
very important thing we overlooked.
We care about what others think of us. It's why we wear deodorant and refrain from picking our noses and jacking off in public.
What? That's what it is?
Yeah.
I thought it just made people uncomfortable.
I thought it's because no one could give me an erection in public.
In Miami? Oof.
No, I'm very specific.
Oh,
if someone dresses up in a fox outfit, then we'll talk.
Oh, know what the furries are? Yeah, Ma, right here.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I didn't have a plushie hidden away from you for years. All right, so and you signed off the email with bandwagon fans. They are the scum of the earth.
Oh, they are.
Okay, so why do you hate bandwagon fans so much, Josh?
I mean, I kind of wrote it in the letter, but just to tell the.
Do you want me to? I can summarize it if you want.
No, that's okay. I can summarize it.
You
want to
do it?
Right, I can summarize it.
He can do his own thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really two parts. There's a part where, you know, being a fan of some kind of team, you know, you emotionally invest in that team. I know it's totally irrational. It might be one of the most irrational things anyone can ever do.
That in the Black and Jew podcast.
Yeah. Okay. It's like the last tribalism.
Yeah,
you know, is rooting for a sports team, but you know, if you're a real fan of that team, you put a lot of emotional investment into it. You spend time, you know, researching the team.
Yeah,
you know, who's on this team? What do they do well? What don't they do well? Who am I gonna yell at to get fired? Jesus!
You're getting emotional.
I'm getting really emotional here. Who are we gonna yell at to get fired when our team sucks?
Mike just lowered it again. Yeah.
It was clipping. But anyways, continue.
I'll give you a hint. It's Will Muschamp. But anyway. But because you guys were saying that, the great thing, about all these bandwagon fans that you have more people to cheer with, and that's true. Okay. You do, but you also don't have as many people when you lose.
Mm.
Like when you lose, you want to commiserate. You want to be, you want to be like, it's okay. You know, we'll get him next year. Or you just want to be mad for the right reasons as to why things didn't work out. But you know, if you're someone who's just glomming onto the team because they're popular and they're winning, you're just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah,
and then you just leave. And the metaphor I use, it's like having a guy that you claim to be your friend because he's fun to hang out with at parties. But then when you call him up like, hey, I need to move. Could you help me? He's like, nah.
Yeah.
True that.
Or you want to talk to him about your breakup.
Yeah. And he's like, you know what? I got better shit to do.
And you said another thing about it jacks up the prices of merchandising supporting your team.
Yeah. I mean, not so much the merchandising because a lot of, well, not the primary merchandising because that's run by the different leagues.
Uh-huh.
But, tickets, like if you want to get tickets to the games, I mean, obviously, the more the team is winning, the more people jump on the bandwagon, the more demand there is for the tickets, and it jacks up the prices. I mean, you can look, if you want to get Miami Heat tickets, they're going to be way more expensive than someone who wants, say, Milwaukee Bucks tickets.
Really? I wouldn't think that.
I mean,
no, I'm just being sarcastic.
At least on the secondary market.
I'm not that ignorant.
Oh, okay.
Sports.
All right.
I don't know, but where do I fall, okay? Because I am more of a football person. Like, I don't really like sports that much at all, okay, first off. And I'm more of a football person anyway.
Uh-huh. Me too.
So yeah. I go, like, I'll go to the Dolphins games, like, and you can't really accuse me of being a bandwagoner for the Dolphins because they're horrible. But I'll go to the Dolphins games. I try to go to every home game. My dad's season tickets is like 1984. But with basketball, I don't really care that much about the sport. I only watch the conference finals and the finals, and I root for them when I do. So does that make me a horrible bandwagoner?
No. I mean, because what a bandwagon fan will do is that they will claim that they've been a fan the whole time.
Oh, okay. So that's the distinction then of a bandwagon.
Yeah, that's a distinction. It's not someone who's like, for example, with the World Cup and Team USA you know, getting to the knockout rounds and everything, I find that I'm following the World Cup way more than I thought I would be.
Yeah.
You know, and cheering for Team USA and stuff like that. I'm not going to claim to be like a Team USA super fan.
Yeah, okay? Of course.
I can't name every single person on the squad. you know, I know a little bit about, you know, how they've done in the past, but that's not... You know, if they lose, I'll be bummed out because, you know, Team USA ends up losing.
Because we're the best country
but
in the world.
But I'm not. That's right. And I don't care what Obama does to try to ruin this country. He's a terrorist, I tell you. But anyway.
It's his he's the reason we're good at soccer now.
Because
he's a fucking communist playing a fucking communist sport.
That's right.
I bet next to those soccer players are going to come in your house, going to take your guns, going to run so fast because they fast, and then you ain't going to be able to catch them.
That's right.
Because you know you eat 17 Jimmy Dean sausages every morning because of freedom, and you got the high cholesterol. You're not going to be able to chase after no quick soccer player that's fueled by the power of communism.
That's right. But, I mean, I'll be kind of bummed out about that. But I don't have the emotional investment, and I will not claim to have the emotional investment.
So this is a revelation for me, okay?
Uh-huh.
That I didn't know that bandwagoners, the distinction is that they pretend...
Like
they've always given a shit.
Oh yeah, they'll pretend that they've always given a shit. They'll buy all the.
Okay, so this makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you explained this to me, because so the distinction between a bandwagon fan is that ostensibly they're a Heat fan.
Yes.
But when you really get down to it, they're not.
Right.
Like me talking to a girl at a bar, pretending like I care about her photography blog, but in reality, I want to get into her pants.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay,
the idea.
I understand. I don't pretend like I'm like a fucking huge basketball fan.
True.
Like, right. I like it, and I do get emotionally invested in the finals, but like I'm not gonna be like, I know, like I see people online getting in arguments all the time, and I'm like, how long have you been a basketball fan? Like,
yeah. And you can tell because they know nothing about the team. Like they can't name any of the old players, you know, they don't know some of the great moments or the terrible moments that happened to the team. Their suggestions for things are just dumb.
Yeah.
Just really dumb.
That won't work. That's a different sport.
And they're just cluttering up the avenues for discussion with that bullshit. Yeah, I can't pretend like I know what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
You know? But I don't know, man. I don't even really
like
that.
But you see that in... you see that even in nerd circles, too.
Oh, yeah.
People who claim to be bigger fans of things
and
they really don't. I remember we did this at some friends of mine... I want to say 10 years ago, we did this at MegaCon, where we dressed up like fake anime characters.
No shit.
Yeah, we dressed up as like generic, but kind of fake anime characters claiming to be part of this hot new anime.
No way.
That just came over from Japan and just started talking to people saying like, oh yeah, we're from like Shigure no Toru. I don't even know.
That'd be a great skit to do. Like if you guys are doing the... SuperCon show, just like do that.
Oh, we should do
just
that.
Just like with Jimmy Kimmel did at Coachella.
Yeah. Same idea. And just go up to people and just be like, yeah, it's like this hot underground new anime.
Indie, like a production company. It's an indie animation company.
Yeah,
like
that's a
an old director
idea.
From Gainax is behind us.
Wow.
It's really cool.
Oh yeah, really cool. And we just start making up names.
So
and they're
people,
like, yeah, we've heard of that.
They said that?
Oh yeah.
How far do they take it?
They'll just be like, oh, no, they'll say like, oh yeah, I've heard of that. That's, I'm really excited to hear
I haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet.
Yeah,
but
that's what they'll do.
But, like, I heard really good things. Or like, Oh yeah, yeah. Is that the one with them? And then you say something.
Yeah, and then we say like the guy with the purple hair with the big sword, and they're like, yes.
I remember in high school we convinced this kid that Anarchy was a punk rock band because he would see the stickers everywhere, and he's like, their first album was fucking awesome. Second one, not so much.
And then when they changed the guitarist, it actually, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I that would be fun to film that. Like to go around, like I did those things with Lisa, like going around to, I really want to go to the anime convention, even though she probably wouldn't want to do it because she has that Revenge of the Nerds and she wouldn't want to piss off the owners. Uh-huh. I don't know. I'd have to talk to her about it. But yeah, Lisa's really funny with stuff like that. Like, have you seen did you go to the Casa Tonight thing? I forget.
No, I didn't.
Have you seen Lisa Goes to Art Walk yet?
Yes.
You saw that? All right, cool.
That I have
not seen that.
Yeah, she's really good. We went to a porn convention actually. But it was really good. I was listening to just some audio from it because like I have to sit on the footage because she's got a show with Nickelodeon. You know, you don't want it to,
right?
Like, you don't want that association. And like she was talking to this webcam, this cam whore or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were doing live shows at the convention at Exotica. And like, what did Lisa say to her that was so funny? She was like, what's the weirdest thing that you've ever asked, like someone's ever asked you to do? Like, they're having this conversation like this, that's like about some weird shit. And Lisa goes, is it weird if I say that you remind me of my mom? And she goes, yeah, sort of. And I'm like, this is so fucking funny. Oh my God. It's so, so brilliant. Oh my God. All right. Well, you got to get out of here, right,
yeah,
Josh?
Yeah, I got to get out of here. Yeah.
So we're going to have to wrap it up, I guess. All right. So thanks for being on the podcast, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We had a great time. I knew you'd be a good guest, and you delivered. Not as much as I thought, but all right. You were okay. That's what we like to do. We like to insult the guests at the end of the episode. We're not going to pretend like we're going to have to make
you
beatbox.
Have a loaf of bread?
Yeah, we'll give you... Well, I got to give you a slice of that before you go.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, man. So you can find me on Twitter, Mike Marianoff. On Facebook, Mike Marianoff Comedy. Reggie?
You can find me on Twitter at @Ratchet_Reggie and on Instagram at @Black_Dottis.
Always the enthusiasm for that. And Josh, where could people find you?
I'm on Facebook. Just search for Josh Silverman. I'm on Twitter at @JSilvComic.
Make a Joshua Silverman comic?
I did. Okay. Josh Silverman was taken.
Yeah, yeah.
By the CEO of Skype.
Uh-huh.
So I was Joshua Silverman for a while, and then I realized that nobody knows who that is because I never go by Joshua.
Yeah, yeah.
So I changed to J Silv Comic.
Oh, okay. I think that's better than Joshua.
Yeah.
That sounds like your mom made your Twitter handle like Joshua.
Yeah, it does. And that's what John Vargas used to tell me.
Could you put the side part in your hair when you're for your Twitter profile picture? All right, guys. Well, it's been great. It's been fun. It's been extra Jewish this time. So until next time.
See ya.
Bye.